Awesome. We're recording and I didn't look at what the date is. So let's see. This intro is going to be a little weird until, hello everyone and welcome to the first Pony Sync meeting that we've had in quite a while. Today is Tuesday, April 14th, 2020. It's our first pandemic sync. I'm Sean Allen. I'm hosting today. Can we have everyone go around and introduce themselves so people can know their voices, starting with Joe?
I'm Joe McElvain. I'm at least 6 feet away from Sean right now.
And Gordon?
I'm Gord Tischer, and I'm in the interior of Canada.
And Ryan?
I'm Ryan Higginson.
And Andy?
I'm Andy Turley, calling in from Kansas, the number 50 state in terms of testing.
Oh, well, awesome. All right. And Theo?
Hi, I'm Theo. I am calling from Philadelphia, where things are not quite as bad as I thought they would be at this point.
Your mic, by the way, is very quiet, Theo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And, oh God, it's been so long. Candle, are you also an Andy? I'm trying to remember.
I'm also an Andrew.
Yes, you're an Andrew, not an Andy. That's right. I was like, yes, yes, there we go. Sorry, it's been a bit and my brain is still, it's not like 2 weeks ago I had a hard time remembering what the next word I wanted to use was when this time of the day rolled around. So that's a marked improvement for my cognitive skills. That's the word I'm looking for there.
So is my mic better now? Or yep. Would you like it louder?
Oh, much better. Woo!
Okay, great.
That's like hallelujah. Nice and loud. Nice and loud. So we discussed in the Zulip, skipping the usual sort of stuff that we do for sync, and having a discussion first, and we'll see how far that goes. The discussion was about object capabilities in Pony and what it is that we're, why they exist, what it is that we want to get from them in the language, then to make sure that things like how CFFI is handled and object capabilities are, that we actually have that, and we could start discussing where our deficiencies are for what we might have, and just in generally cover that. What do you think, Joe or Andy? You were both involved in that conversation on Zulip. Would it be helpful for me for this call to speak out for the call what I had said in the Zulip for a bit more?
I think that would be good, and also I'm not sure I fully understand your position, so it'd be great to
talk about it.
Yeah, why don't you do that, Sean?
Okay, so I'm mostly going to read from what's in the Zulip and maybe fill in a little bit. Why does Pony have object capabilities, and what are we hoping to achieve with them? For example, if it's about security, what sort of security? From my standpoint, I'm particularly interested in object capabilities from a security standpoint, in particular a supply chain standpoint. If you look at things that have happened with like Ruby modules, NPM modules, et cetera, you have a lot of cases of where perhaps the most severe is some library that gets used by a lot of projects, ends up having like some code inserted into it that might do some stuff to open up TCP connections or whatever in order to be able to do like stealing stuff from a Bitcoin wallet or whatever, where you wouldn't expect this module to do anything network-wise. And object capabilities can allow a program to more securely have more trust in what the in what a program is going to be able, what a module that we include is going to be able to do, right? So that it's not going to, we don't have to necessarily validate each time that we go to do an update, not that people really actually do this, but that there isn't some new thing in like what's just supposed to be a regex library that it's not now making, you know, TCP connections out and uploading files from the computer that's running on, for example. That's a supply chain, like part of protecting an open source supply chain there. That can be somewhat problematic, however, when you put it together with how we do FFI right now, which is the default for every Pony program is allow any module to do FFI, which means that I could, with any Pony module, bypass all object capabilities if I'm able to pull off FFI. Now, depending on, you know, what's available to me, this might not be a lot. However, there's an awful lot of stuff like network access and everything, which you could directly tap into from the Pony runtime that ships with it. And so it's still rather problematic. It's just kind of a giant end run around object capabilities. And the developer UX for object capabilities is, well, it's, you know, it requires additional work and whatnot for something where the FFI is basically a giant backdoor around a nice chunk of it. And so that, you know, really got me thinking quite some time ago, why do we have object capabilities and what are we looking to get from them? For me, it mostly comes down to that sort of security stuff. And then even within that, it becomes a question of what sort of security. Like, for example, as Dan Connolly pointed out like 3 or 4 years ago, time.now can be used for timing attacks. It's a form of ambient authority. That's not currently something that we provide a capability for in Pony. Is it something that we want to? And rather than just making a one-off decision for, hey, should it be time.now, I think it would be good to have a conversation in general about if we're going to have object capabilities, why do we have them and what are we looking to accomplish from them? And then how does that also interface with FFI and what could we do to, if we do have object capabilities and it's about security, what can we do to try and make our story so that FFI isn't basically just an end run around it, better in some type of fashion? That would be my intro.
That's a good intro to the conversation. So maybe to, if you could tell me if this is like a kind of a fair summary of like where you're at, Sean. The idea being that, like, okay, the promise of the type of security we might be able to get from object capabilities is an attractive one, but right now the fact that CFFI is on by default for all modules is, you know, compromising that, and also the developer UX for object capabilities can be cumbersome and might become even more cumbersome if we decide to really be complete about things like time.now. Is that a reasonable summary-ish?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
So I do have some thoughts, but I don't want to monopolize, so I'm curious to hear other people's thoughts first before I spoil.
So I'm happy to just kind of talk about my thoughts if anybody wants to hear those.
I do.
I think I already expressed them reasonably well in the Zulip, or at least I got them all out. They may not have been well articulated, but just to recap, I agree with Sean that the supply chain issue is probably the biggest benefit that we could tout for reference or for object capabilities in Pony. It's the one that I bring up when I'm giving talks about Pony. I usually don't spend a whole lot of time dwelling on it. It's mostly, hey, what's this thing doing here in the middle of these network calls? Oh, here's what it is. Here's why it exists. People usually say, oh, that's neat. And then the conversation doesn't go a whole lot further than that. But I think that people are, you know, as we see more and more of these supply chain attacks, I think that people are becoming more and more interested in ways of mitigating them. I've done a fair bit of Pony CFFI work, and I guess my first thought is that you should probably, if you need to use the FFI, you should be able to localize it fairly well in your code. And so my feeling is that if somebody has a package that uses FFI, there should basically be a way to audit and say, you know, as you're building your program based on some third-party package, you should be able to get a report from the compiler or some other tool that tells you where FFI is being used, and then you can go and take a look at it. and basically say, oh yes, this looks like it's on the up and up, or this looks sketchy, or a variation of this looks sketchy is, I have no idea what the fuck is going on here, and, oops, sorry. And so I'm not gonna include this in my code because I don't want something that I don't understand. I feel like that's, I feel like for me that would be sufficient, in that you know, if I was using a third-party package, I could at least start taking a look at what I calls they were, thought they were safe. And if somebody's making too many FFI calls, that would probably be a you know, might not kill the whole endeavor, but I'd certainly have some serious thoughts if they were making so many FFI calls that they couldn't of what was happening. I think that's probably going to be easier than trying to either have like per module permissions or you know, making every FFI call require a an authentication token or something like that. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, I have some thoughts kind of based on those. So when we talk about, I have some ideas that fit together here, but I guess most specifically honing in real quick on the point about auditing the FFI usage in application, because I find that to be pretty interesting. One of the patterns I've been thinking about for doing that, kind of as part of some broader ideas I have on this, but more specifically about that, like, so if we had some integration at the dependency management level, if, like, many of you have probably worked in languages and tool sets that have package manager that, you know, you have a file where you specify what you want to depend on, and then there's another file generally called the lock file. So for example, in JavaScript, you've got package.json, you know, package-lock.json, or, you know, other languages have their own variation on that. But the idea being that you, one of them is meant to be written by humans, the other one, the lock file, is meant to be written by a machine, but still, you know, sort of readable by a human who wants to audit. So I would find it interesting to have, you know, if we had a dependency pulling system that could, let's say we were just going to lock by git commit, for example, you could say that, okay, I'm going to pull in Sean's message pack library. Like when I pull it in, I specify, okay, I'm just going to pull latest master. My lock file sets it to the specific commit that was at latest master when I did the pull, and I can update that later if I want to. But every time that does update, it includes not just the commit, but, you know, like a some other information that could be used to audit kind of what's going on there. And one example of what that could be is like a list of FFI functions that are called within that library, or you know, like the list of those call sites that you could go and look at. So that way, like, if I go and update my version of Sean's library, and I see that there's now FFI calls in there that weren't before, which I would see as part of the git diff for the commit in which I'm updating, right? If I'm keeping my lock file in version control, like it's common practice to do in these tool sets, then I notice that I can see in the diff, there's now a new FFI call that's trying to like read files on my system. It's like, well, message pack shouldn't be doing that, or at least, you know, it should be isolated, you know, some particular feature, I can go audit that. So that's one pattern for looking at auditing this that I would put forward. I also have some other ideas around what else could be included in that sort of permissions style lock file, but that, anybody have thoughts about that sort of pattern as a way of auditing changes in sort of the security characteristics of a dependency I'm pulling in?
So that check would be run at compile time, right? Or before compile time, or there'd be a tool?
It would be at update time, right?
Okay.
When I update the library, it updates the lock file.
Okay.
And then in my git commit, I would have as part of the diff the updates to the lock file, which would include, you know, for example, new lines that show new FFI calls being made.
Okay. So part of the update, so this would be part of something like, I'm just going to say Corral or some other form of package manager, dependency manager.
I'm thinking that this may end up needing some level of compiler integration based on some of the other ideas that I have about it. But that's, the idea would be when you run your dependency manager to update your set of dependencies, this would be a part of that process.
Okay, got it. And then you're talking about like basically a raw diff that's kind of just a diff of the FFI calls.
Yeah, you might see the list of functions that are called and like the file name and line number that they're called on, for example.
Okay.
So, Joe, do you think then that there would be something with this tool where this tool could then fill in, there's some way for me to say whether I want to allow a particular package to do FFI, and maybe through the tool, which is running Pony C or whatever, only ones which I've specifically, I have to specifically then say that these things are allowed to do FFI, so that if, like, let's say Pony Message Pack wasn't doing any FFI, right? And then I do an update and I don't notice necessarily that it's doing FFI, but because I haven't added it to an allow list in the tool that's doing this, then the flag wouldn't be added in for doing safe, right, with the name of the module to Pony C, so it wouldn't compile. I get a compile time error basically saying, hey, there's a thing which is not marked as safe, which is trying to do FFI. Do you think that would be part of how this might work?
Yeah, I think something like that would be really helpful. Like definitely if you were to implement that like in today's world without any changes to Pony C, right? Like that's the way you would do it, right? I think you can do it as you described have this on-off flag for FFI be kind of off by default when you're using this dependency manager. Or even we could suggest off by default in Pony C in general. But you know that. Yeah. So what we haven't done yet is necessarily talk about object capabilities, and I do kind of want to get there. So one of the ideas I've been thinking about that's related to this is, so we're looking at like the developer UX cumbersomeness for doing passing object capabilities, especially if we really go all in and say that time.now and other like anything that meets this like criteria of information coming from outside of the data you know, that you have like pointer access to, or going to outside of like any side effect or infect, having a capability attached to it. It does, the cumbersomeness is only going to increase based on that. And if you were to say that all FFI calls needed such a token, then unless you're going to explicitly like allow the built-in package, right, then anything in the built-in, like for example, array methods are all using pointer stuff. Although I guess they're not doing it via FFI there, but they're kind of doing the sort of same sort of unsafety stuff that's just allowed by the compiler. But there's quite a bit of stuff that, well, I have to look now and see what's in the standard library. But there's quite a bit of stuff that's using FFI that you wouldn't necessarily want the cumbersomeness of passing that token around to. So one idea that I've been thinking about in relation to this and in relation to like the dependency management idea is what if the main actor was not the only, or specifically the end class path to the main actor, what if that was not the only source of, not the only root of authority? So let's say, for example, that any package could have a private primitive within it that could, like, let's say within that private primitive, it's like special cased in some way. You can manufacture object capability tokens, or at least stateless ones. Like we can leave out for now object capabilities that include data like file paths, for example, but talk about, for example, TCP auth or TCP listen auth, which is like a stateless primitive that is only constructible from an end.root. Let's say that you were able to construct those primitives also within this sort of special case, like root of authority for your module or for your package. And that root of authority being a private primitive so that it was only callable within your package to construct these. And because it's a primitive and it's like returning primitives, it could be zero cost in terms of allocation or runtime issues. So we have this private primitive that's within your modular package, and it has the capability to manufacture like certain let's say that we have a IRC client package that needs to do a TCP connect auth. So it would have this private primitive that has within it the capability to manufacture TCP connect auth. And then sort of tying it into the dependency manager, because this private primitive within the package is somehow special cased and linked to the dependency manager, we could say that like, okay, I'm going to explicitly grant this this package the ability to TCP connect auth without being passed any object capabilities. That would be an example of something you could do. And the dependency manager would link into the compiler somehow and say that, okay, this package is allowed to manufacture these tokens, but not any others. And the package within can then just call those primitive methods, again, because it's stateless primitive as the receiver and stateless primitive as what's being returned. That could be all inlined by the compiler to just be a pointer to static memory and be zero cost. And so everywhere, then it becomes a little bit more feasible to say that everywhere you do time.now or everywhere you do an FFI call, you include this token as part of it. And that becomes something that you can, it kind of gives you the option to either pass in object capabilities to the library, so like grant, so some other library is creating the thing and passing it in sort of conditionally into the package, or you can unconditionally grant the package the ability to manufacture it. And that's kind of like a higher level of trust, but a lower level of cumbersomeness in the developer UX. There's a lot, but I don't know, thoughts?
Trust injection? I'd have to think through it a little more. It sounds like
my first reaction is not positive, but I need to think through it more.
Instinctively, my first thought is that there might be a clever way around it, and basically, I think for the kind of attacks that John and I are thinking about, I feel like it might be leaving too many doors open. But that's really, that's a paranoid gut feeling that I have. And so, yeah, that's kind of the sort of, I think that's the direction that I'd start thinking in if I was trying to evaluate that. I don't know, Sean, do you have any specific ideas of things that you find that you think might be directions that you'd want to look at if you were investigating this?
My first reaction is it sounds like it's adding an awful lot of complexity in a different direction to deal with the complexity of having to require a dependency, which might float down a large amount of stuff, which is in general what you would have happen if you don't allow ambient authority in general for stuff. And so I want to think about it some more. And I don't know, Joe, could you mock up like some pseudocode sometime when you have a chance of what you imagine it would look like? I think that would be easier to react to. I definitely don't want to dismiss it, but my first reaction is, but I also recognize it's like, maybe I don't understand it, and understanding it better and spending more time like on it, I think would be a good thing. It's not like it's a large thing, and you know, any immediate gut reaction just seems like, you know, wrong. I'd want to spend some time really like looking at it and considering and whatnot.
So I am an attacker. I have access to someone else's library. I can change their repository and release a new version. I can change what this magic token says to say allow TCP when it doesn't normally. You then pull in an update to that library, and it's up to the dependency manager to check this token and assert that no additional permissions or authority is allowed. That seems that it's heavily dependent on dependency manager, which isn't necessarily what the user of my library is using.
Yeah. So the other way to look at it is to say that that manufacturing capabilities from within the library is not possible by default. And then you need to pass, so let's say you're not using the dependency manager at all, right? This feature, this ability would be off by default in Pony.c, and you'd have to add explicit command line arguments, similar to what Sean was talking about earlier with what we have --- safe for Pony.c right now, which is effectively like allow FFI for this package. And this would be something akin to, okay, allow manufacturing TCP off for this package, manufacturing this off for the package. And so it would be something that, like, if it's off by default and you have to pass it in as an argument, it's not necessarily requiring the dependency manager to be there, The dependency manager makes it so
but if you don't have to
explicitly pass those in each time if you've got it in a file.
If it's off, then what, my library is also going to allow for you to pass it in through a normal dependency? As a normal dependency to a constructor?
Yeah, that's a good question. We should take a look at how some code would look to make it do this, but you know that something like that could be possible. Like let's say this check within the compiler was near the end, like before it generates, like before the last step of generating the program for execution. You could do this check that only does it for reachable functions, right? So if the function to manufacture to manufacture a capability within the package is never reached, then the package is not actually requiring that capability for this compilation. And that would allow you to do things like, okay, you know, my package provides a convenient way to spin up an IRC client with no authority passed in, and we're just going to create it on our own. But to use that, you have to allow it within the dependency manager. But if you don't choose to do that, if you're less trusting, you could pass in a TCP port like object, you know, the specific object that says, okay, you can only connect to this host on this port and can't connect to anything else because I don't really trust you, IRC client, then that you'd call like a different version of the constructor that used the passed in object capability instead of reaching out to this like authority factory. And because of the authority factory is never reached, it's not actually required for compilation.
Seems like a fair bit of code that every user who wants to use Zappify, every library developer has to add.
It's not just FFI, it's anybody who wants to use capabilities at all. And yeah, it feels like it's pushing it towards the, like right now with FFI, I have to allow FFI on a per module basis. If I need to use the library, I'm going to say, yes, okay, here, I trust this library, and it will continue, like, and the library, from the point that I audit it, could do anything else in the future with FFI, which means that even with the auditing stuff that Andy and Joe were talking about, I think that'd be helpful. It's better than what we have now, but it's still, in the end, it's basically like, well, an awful lot of people might never look at that, and I'm basically just saying, here's a blob of code, and I'm going to trust it to pretty much do anything when I say, you know, that it can do FFI. And I feel like if it's like, oh, hey, here's this, you can construct authority, but you have to whitelist it thing, then the moment that's the case, like, it's basically the object capabilities are a whole bunch of extra developer experience stuff that's weighing you down, and it's going to become as much of a thing that you could drive a tank through as the CFFI. And at that point, I think it's got like, I wouldn't think it's worth it at that point. If we're going to have object capabilities, and I'm definitely very interested in them from the supply chain side, I think, you know, that they need to provide strong guarantees, and that CFFI is actually problematic towards that, and that the authority thing, as I understand it, with the safe list and everything else, would push it more towards like the level of trust that you need to have for the CFFI. And at that point, you know, I don't know that it's worth it to even have them at all.
Yeah, well, it would be sort of, you know, users who are looking, developers who are looking for an easy path would probably just use the allowed list. Developers that are looking for, that are a little more paranoid, would be using the object capability, so they would still be
I think you're going to end up with it, but then that's requiring everybody who writes a library to make it so that it'll work with both, which is putting, like, a lot of weight on everybody who does a library. I think your end result of that is that most people are just going to assume the allowed list, and now you're carrying around baggage for something where most people aren't even providing folks who are actually interested in what object capabilities can give you that, and everybody, and then the lowest common denominator is everybody else just sidestepping around it, which becomes useless.
I think these are, I wouldn't necessarily say useless, but it's definitely a fair criticism. I'm coming from the perspective of, like, if people are annoyed by the ceremony, the cumbersomeness of object capabilities, like, how can we try to save them for the people who want them, while not burdening everyone so much? Although I think it's fair to say that this solution I'm talking about does burden the library author a little bit with both of those options.
Yeah, so we're definitely coming at it from different angles. Mine is if people are going to pay, like, a cost for what they're used to with being in a language where they have ambient authority, right, and having to take on additional overhead, then I want to make sure that they're getting the value that we say that they're getting from it. And that's where, like, concern about, like, FFI in the way that FFI currently works with, like, the current Pony defaults, where it's just like, hey, any package can do FFI. So I could have for how the Pony compiler currently works, I could, you know, be doing all of this stuff for object capabilities, but some library could be doing random TCP calls using, like, you know, the primitives, you know, the C primitives that are in the Pony standard library, and I wouldn't even, you know, the runtime, and I wouldn't necessarily know about it, right? So I got ceremony to do object capabilities. I'm doing that, I would assume, in part because I'm interested in having, like, that protection for my program, yet here's this giant gaping hole in another part of the language and the runtime, which renders it completely useless.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. Like, I thought I was coming at it from the perspective of trying to save object capabilities from an angry mob who wanted to destroy them, but it sounds like what you want is to strengthen them, which I'm also in favor of.
I think they either need to be strengthened or they need to be ditched. I think we're in a really bad place right now of where we're asking people to do this stuff, which is unexpected for a lot of people coming from ambient authority languages, but I think we're asking them to do it for very good reasons, but then we're completely negating those reasons with how the CFFI works. Well, not completely, because, like, I would have to know, for example, like, if it can't be any arbitrary C code, it has to be something right now basically that's in the Pony runtime. And because it's in the Pony runtime, that also means in the C standard library, which is still an awful lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, and if you get creative enough, if you compromise memory safety, you can do anything, right? So it just takes a little more creativity than it otherwise would. So, I mean, I think as long as we have CFFI at all, right, within a package, the package can do CFFI. There's not a lot we can do to really clamp down on and prevent them from doing anything they want at that point. So,
I think you sort of raised some stuff there, actually, with what you had. If we have a tool which can audit, right, we could potentially, for example, not just say that this is on a per module basis, but we could have it be that on a per module basis, for example, we could be required to allow list every single FFI call that it makes, for example. I mean, this is something that we could do, right? We as a compiler know that this is there, and we could have a mechanism whereby, you know, FFI is only allowed from within stuff which ships with Pony, for example. By default, that's on. But then for anything else, it's off, and you have to specifically allow list it, perhaps like right down to the different functions that would be allowed to be called. And that would certainly close things down an awful lot.
I wouldn't even necessarily allow everything in the standard library to be on by default, honestly. I think maybe built in, but not the whole standard library, because I think you should treat those packages the same and assume that somebody could come in and commit something
that's an excellent point.
That we don't know it's malicious when we approve the pull request, you know.
That's true.
This is sort of, if I understand correctly, we have this idea of like taking it a little bit further than what we were talking about earlier with auditing and having this, you know, what I was calling the lock file, where you've got the list of calls that are made and you need to update the lock file in order to, when the dependency manager pulls down the dependencies, it updates the lock file. And I think what we're adding on top of that is the idea that somehow the Pony compiler reads the lock file and makes sure that all of the entries are in there for every FFI call that's made, to like sort of close the gap and make sure that somebody doesn't like compromise the dependency management and like the lock file doesn't reflect every call, but we've still passed allow to FFI in Pony. Is that where you're going?
It is an idea that I had as part of things that have been discussed here, as a way, if we're interested in having object capabilities and we're interested in trying to limit the ways that CFFI could be a way to get around that, then I think that, and I certainly didn't have this idea when we started this conversation, but based on some of the stuff that's come up during the conversation, I think that's something we could consider.
Okay. So, I guess I would ask, is there anything else that we can do? I do want to come back and talk about time.now, but is there any other ideas that people have around controlling FFI and taming that beast a little bit?
I don't, but I do want to, I personally am going to go off and think more about some of the stuff that's come up during the call, because what I had is an idea coming into it, which I never actually really discussed, which is great. I think that these things are better than what I came into it thinking of anyway, after having thought about it for a while. So I want to think more on some of the stuff that's come up on this.
Andy, I see you're unmuted. Do you have thoughts?
I was kind of stumbling around on some, I think we should give it a little more thought. I think also, Joe, as you pointed out, it sounds like there might be a few different ways of coming at, of looking at this problem, or of seeing it as a problem even. And so it might be worthwhile to come up with a more concrete written down form of exactly what problems we think we're trying to solve for here. That way we just don't wander too far off track, and we can evaluate any suggested solutions in terms of the problems as they're described. Does that make sense? I feel like that would help us focus our thoughts a little more, and also keep us from trying to boil the ocean, or trying to boil a larger part of the ocean than we want.
Yeah.
I feel like at least part of that, that's why I brought up time.now, the time.now example in the intro and what I wrote on Zulip, because it's like, well, I don't know that, like, is... For what we're looking to get, if we have object capabilities and we're saying they're for security, which at least for me they are, what does security actually mean there, right? And I think that's part of what you're getting at, is because we could require you to provide a capability for literally everything, theoretically, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm.
Allocating memory is a vulnerability, right?
It could be taken to be, like, yes, a vulnerability, because I could try to, like, just blow up, my module could blow up all of the memory and cause you to get oomed, you know? And technically, we could say that, I mean, now, how on earth we could get around that would by saying, oh, you can have a capability to actually allocate memory. Well, it's probably not very useful, but it's at least good, you know, for what is it, what are we even really trying when we say security, if that's what it is or why we have capabilities. You know? And I think time.now is an interesting one to start having a conversation about, but perhaps, you know, just use it as a jumping off point.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit more about, like, the mechanics of how somebody might pull off a timing attack from a library and what that might mean in sort of a practical example?
Sure. And do you want to talk about that right now, or have that as anything to talk about in the future?
Well, I think we kind of have a handle right now on the FFI discussion. So I am curious to kind of to go down this question within the time remaining that we have, go down this question of, like, what are our criteria for something that is requiring an object capability? And so, like, I want to better understand, like, how a real timing attack might look, and, like, what we would be mitigating against by requiring a capability for it, right? So I guess I'll just throw something out there. Like, so let's say you have a package within your library that needs to look up some sensitive information and does not want to divulge to the caller whether that sensitive information, like, existed or not, right? I guess I'm still being pretty generic. The caller could use time.now to make some good guesses about, like, whether that information existed or not when you ran your lookup for it. Is that the kind of thing we're talking about preventing, or is there a more I don't want to say serious, but more obvious example?
Well, so here would be one way to reframe that slightly, Joe, right? Like, let's say that somebody found a way to use time.now in order to be able to access information from an actor in Pony, from a different actor which shouldn't have access to that information. Do we consider that a problem? Given that one actor might have the ability to make network calls and the other does not, right? So if I could access information which the network actor is not supposed to be able to get at, which is supposed to be private data in another actor, and I could then use that to send information out that's in that other actor, is that problematic? If it could be used to basically do some type of attack potentially from information from one bit of memory within inside of a Pony program from another location where I wouldn't otherwise have access to it. That's one sort of thing which is potentially somebody could show could be done, right? And is that something that we care about where, or do we basically consider it of, hey, this is not really a security thing, you know, that information is somewhere, it is in another actor. It just happens to be the scoping rules of the language are keeping you from being able to access it. But if you were to able to do some type of exploit to get access to it from another actor, is that something that we consider a serious problem? Right? Versus, could I use timing stuff in order to execute from within a Pony program attacks on the host system in general that I'm running on in order to be able to try and get additional information, like perhaps, to be able to even write a program that would do, like, speculative specter type stuff. And if my program is not allowed to do time.now at all, then, hey, it's not going to be able to do that. Now, we can't actually stop you, given how we have ambient authority right now with a Pony program from the top. I could do that. But if we say, hey, that we consider we would want people to be able to even prevent you from being able to do time.now in general as somebody who's running the program, then, you know, that opens up a whole different set of things that we could be talking about in terms of what security means, right?
Yes, it does.
I feel like for me, that's an easier way to approach it, is saying, like, well, if it could be used to do, like, this type of thing or this other type of thing, then we would consider it problematic. And this should be something which there should be a capability for. I think the capabilities that we currently have are very much built around the ones where we're actually requiring capabilities are things where I can access things that are on the computer that are outside of my memory space for what I can create in this program. For example, reading and writing files, right? Or being able to communicate off this machine or otherwise communicate outside of my process, right? So being able to do TCP calls, for example, or UDP calls or something. And I think pretty much all of our capabilities are currently scoped to something like that. And time.now, if you look at it, is not clearly and obviously one of those things where it's directly like access to something which is outside, that lives outside of the memory space of this process.
I mean, it sort of is in the way you framed it, right?
But I think that's the question. And Andy, what you were looking at is if we're saying that we have object capabilities for security, what exactly is it that we're trying to secure? Yes?
I believe that's what it is.
When I said that we should write down what we're doing and have specific ideas. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably, Joe, that's the thing that we should really all think about is like we have something that we know the object capabilities are doing right now, which is at some broad level it's securing access to things which are outside of our process or our process space. And I think you could definitely make an argument that time.now would allow you to do timing attacks against the operating system itself, potentially, and do speculative things. And if we say that we want to prevent that, then, you know, it's like, great, we can prevent a module which I pull in from being able to try to do that behind the scenes by not allowing it to use time stuff. But I could still write a program which does that. And those are two entirely separate things as well that I see here, right? I think right now we should limit ourselves, because it's an entirely other big thing, of just saying that I, as a person who's writing the program, object capabilities are to protect me from supply chain attacks, and not we are using object capabilities in part to allow runners of the program to protect themselves from malicious programs.
Yes, I think to protect from malicious programs it's a different discussion, and yeah, I agree with that phrasing.
So I think then if we sit from how I just defined it, right, then I think that time.now should require a capability, because it could be used I could pull in a module, and that module could be updated to try and do Spectre type timing attacks on my computer, or on a computer that is running this particular Pony program when it gets compiled, without us having any knowledge that it was done, without doing a line by line audit of it. Whereas if I allow a thing in order to have access to timers, etc., I at least know that that now becomes a possibility for that module to do that, right?
Do we care about the level of granularity of the time that you fetched, right? Like, if I get seconds since the Unix epoch, right, can I use that to do timing attacks, or do I need a much finer precision? And does that mean that, simple time requests might be possible, whereas somebody who needs a certain level of precision, once you get past a certain threshold of precision, that requires the capability?
Very interesting question, because that sort of goes into that's more of a question of how quickly do you want to be able to perform a timing attack, right? Because you could always make time... like a time.now require or have lower granularity. But I think that you are still able to actually perform a timing attack just in a greater amount of time overall.
Yeah, I feel like it's a, I feel like all of those calls, like any call that does something like that, should really require ambient authority.
Yeah. And just to take what you said, Joe, even a little bit further, if you expand that out to how we do object capabilities currently, we say things like you're allowed to open a TCP connection, right? There's no scoping to where you can open it to or anything else. You can do anything.
Yes, there is.
You can do any sort of TCP connection stuff, right?
We have specific at least I thought we did. I'm pretty sure we have the ability to limit it to a particular port. But let me check.
No. The capability is only a token that allows you to do the opening. It's not scoped to doing a particular port or IP address or anything like that. There's no firewall-y type things. All the capability tokens are completely stateless.
I thought there was a stateless and stateful option, but I'm checking.
I'm not even sure that, like, or I'm reasonably sure that, like, the, hey, we're going to make capabilities so that they can, for networks, so that they can be, like, these really fine-grained, you can only do this, that starts to sound like we're recreating a firewall at a certain point, you know? Right? Like,
yeah.
Like, it's one thing to say, hey, this portion of my program is not allowed to open TCP connections. It's an entirely different thing to say, I'm now going to need to supply what all of the IP ranges, et cetera, it has, which should probably be done at the operating system level, more likely.
I was wrong about this. I thought it was something that we had. I think I was just extrapolating mentally from the way we do files, right? Yeah. Files are stateful in scope to a particular directory. Like, I thought that it was possible to supply an auth that was already code, and then sort of execute it. And I thought maybe it was using that address, but I'm not seeing that. So. Okay.
Well, but if we were to take the lesson of what we currently do and we were to apply it to time.now, I think it would probably be we could potentially require different, like, t- time.now like itself is one function, so you'd probably need a token to do that. But there could be different time-related tokens so that you might not allow people to do something which gives you nanosecond precision or what. I mean, I think it's really, those are on like a, if it's a primitive, it would be on a per function basis, you know?
Right.
Well, you could just have one single timer auth token, or you could have different ones based on precision. And if precision becomes a real issue, maybe there are different, you know, different timer primitive, you know, functions on primitives, which have different levels of granularity that they'll allow you to get.
Yeah. I think that like at a high level, we have the normal time.now, and then we have time.nanos, which is probably just one thing. It's open and leaving it now. So it could be, you know, it, from the way you said it, it sounds like it, you know, it could expand out to be a lot of complexity sprawl, but it's really not, I think, for what we actually have.
I think that goes back to Andy's thing of, you know, we should spend some time figuring out what it is that we want to prevent, what we is that we want it to allow, and what the extent of control that we're really seeking to have, and be able to put that down and have something written. And then we could move from that to how is what we have currently falling short of that, right? Like, I think it was great that we started the conversation with a lot of stuff about, well, we could try to solve it like this or like that for like the FFI stuff. It was great for me because it was like, oh, hey, I never thought of, you know, some of these ideas. But I think, you know, perhaps taking, you know, this and sitting on this for a couple of weeks and then us coming back together and trying to put a document together, you know, perhaps on Zulip, you know, with some conversation there and putting stuff together via like a pull request or whatever to say, here are our goals for object capabilities. And you know, maybe getting together to have a couple more face-to-face conversations or something. And then we could use that to evaluate what we currently have and then start making like RFC suggestions for changes based on here's our goals and here's what we currently have and here's how we're falling short. I think that would be a great next steps for this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It kind of seems like we're dealing with two separate problems here. We have, you know, what are our goals for object capabilities in Pony right now and how are they falling short? And then how can we, it sounds like nobody here has a particular appetite to make FFI be based on object capabilities.
I did before the conversation started. That's what I came into the conversation with. But between you and Andy, without my ever having said that, you talked me out of it already.
Yeah, I would have to agree. I also came in thinking that I would want it to go that way.
Yeah, so it sounds like we're talking about, like, you know, FFI probably not using object capabilities at all and still operating on a whitelist system, but on a more locked down by default style whitelist system, however that goes.
Yeah, because, I mean, what I started thinking about when you guys were talking about it was like, oh my God, if I just give FFI capability, an FFI capability to something, it can still do anything with it, right? And there's really not much protection there. But if it's like, no, this is something entirely different, and I'm now going, and we're going to, you know, for anything which is doing this call out from Pony, we're going to have it do this, then that's, yeah, I mean, now I can, like, we could start to have a tool where it's like, I'm going to whitelist, you know, specific like methods potentially or whatever, and allow those through. And I think that would provide a lot more potential security that people could have with FFI, which would then make the developer UX cost of object capabilities make sense, because there's no longer this giant like bypass that FFI provides.
Yeah, I like the point that you made, which I didn't think of yet. I like the point that you made that if FFI were a capability, it would be a blank check to do anything. It's as good as root authority, unless you provide like sort of qualifying information about what FFI functions can be used in what ways or in what places, some kind of qualifying information. And the only it doesn't make sense to provide that qualifying information from within the program. It makes more sense to provide it at the dependency level.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two problems to solve. I believe they're fully separate at this point, other than that one helps to justify the other.
Yes.
Cool.
I for how we have, I want to go back and look at the file stuff, because that's an interesting one, Joe, right? Because the file ones are really like, hey, I have a file path, therefore I can get access to anything below this file path, and I can give away as a capability to access this to some location which is further scoped within it to other parts, right? So like I could have it's /home/Sean is the file path that I have at the top level of my program, you know, that I did with some ambient auth, and then I can hand off just access to home/Sean/foo to like a submodule, right? And it can't break out of that is the idea. And I think that makes object capabilities like a lot more interesting in that type of way, where if it was purely like how all the TCP stuff is right now, which is just, hey, I can open a TCP connection or I can do DNS, then not doing that in code at all and having it purely be on the basis of, you know what, you have to agree at a compiler level to whitelist allowing this thing to use this other package would start to make a lot more sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm sort of on the side of TCP probably should have an option to limit by, you know, to provide that sort of same thing as file-based, like, right? Like, I gave the example of an IRC client earlier, like, right? Or anything, or like an HTTP library that I want to run as an HTTP client to some API. And like I want to use that library to connect to some specific server, but what I don't want to do is to allow that library to like scan my local developer machine, find that I have some some web server running locally for some like I don't know client project I'm working on, like pull down all the assets from that and like exfiltrate them to somewhere without me knowing. And again, that exfiltration is possible because I already gave it TCP auth to go anywhere. I guess it's also like an HTTP library could like do some like logging of what I'm requesting and like phone home to some malicious other place that I didn't request it to connect to.
Yeah, there's definitely some interest within the realm of what we had defined very hazily for what we want to get from object capabilities. I think there are definitely some stuff that you could look at for how the TCP stuff works right now, where it's falling short of a number of scenarios.
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Oh. We have something. We have some things in the chat. Let's see. Gordon said he had to run. That was a little while ago. Ryan has a call, so he had to duck out. And Andrew said he had to duck out as well. So yes, it's down to just Sean, Joe, Andy, and Theo at this point.
So many ducking out. I feel like we're playing duck and goose here.
do we have anything else on this view right now, or is it mostly just the hey, let's all think about this a bit, and then we can get together in a week or two, having given it some more thought, and start to try and put together a document for what our goals are with object capabilities.
I don't have anything else. I think this was useful to help get us sort of a pre-focus in the right areas, I think.
That was my hope when I brought it up in Zulip, so I'm very happy to where we've gotten to.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Theo?
Yep, it's good for me.
All right. In that case, then, I'll say thank you and stop recording, and we'll see folks next week.